Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. Happy Valentine's Day 2012. I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Sierra. We have an extraordinary couple with us this evening, Brian Crissy, Ph.D., and his wife, Pamela Meyer Crissy, are co-authors of Common Sense in Uncommon Times, Survival Techniques for a Changed World. They are also publishers of over 70 books on topics ranging from UFOs, past lives, and healing to crop circles and close encounters. Brian is CEO of Fifth World Fund, which is a charitable organization that coordinates global visualizations of a better world. Pamela Meyer Crissy is an ordained minister and CEO of Granite Publishing. As publishers, they have opened the door for many starseed-type authors to get their work into the public eye. In fact, we've had a few of their authors as guests on the show talking about their books. And if you're one of those unpublished authors, make sure you write down their websites. It's fifthworld.com, and that's the number 5th world.com, and granite-planet.net. It's granite-planet.net. Brian and Pamela's interview was pre-recorded, but they'll be joining us in the second hour for live questions. Excuse me. Besides publishing, they'll be talking about their own close encounters and some fascinating new work with crop circles and water, so stay tuned. We want to thank Sahar for hosting the switchboard this evening, and if you have questions for our guests, please call in on 917-889-8292, and then press 1 so we know you have a question. If you like the show, remember to click follow on our show page, and tell a friend about us. For our new listeners, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation, and we also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. Plus, we're on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. We'll get started with Brian and Pamela in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings in your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone consultation. You can find out if you have star markings and how they determine your natural state and rites of passage. We now offer a Stage 4 support service with Sierra for contactees and abductees, so check out Sierra's World on our main site. And don't forget, if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by requesting your solar return timing at least a week beforehand. Your manifestational ability is amplified 1,000-fold during those 10 hours, so make the most of it. And now I'd like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar and Sierra. Good evening, ladies. Happy Valentine's Day.
You caught me with popcorn in my mouth. Sorry. Happy Valentine's to everyone listening, and I'm really pleased to have Brian and Pamela join us. I recorded them earlier, so why don't we just go ahead and start it?
All righty. This is Brian and Pamela Crissy.
We are so pleased to have with us today Dr. Brian Crissy and his wife Pamela Crissy, who they have come together in a beautiful publishing house called the Granite Publishing. It's out of North Carolina, and years ago I had a brief discussion with Brian about some of my material many, many years ago, and so recently when I was talking to our friend Eileen, and she was giving me some wonderful guests to have on the show. In fact, she's the one that brought the Zeta message to us with Judy Carroll, Human by Day, Zeta by Night. Brian and Pamela were very instrumental in helping put that message together and those books together. So it's like everybody's kind of in the same family unit here with the information. So I just wanted to welcome you, Brian and Pamela.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Well, it's so wonderful to be able to talk to people that are star-coded. I have just done both of your charts, and it looks like that you're right on schedule with the work that you came here to do on the planet. And, of course, those of us on Starseed Hotline are always interested in publishers and people that can help us get our message out. So, Brian, why don't you just give us a little bit about your background and how you came to be a publisher?
Well, that's an interesting story. There's multiple answers. You know, one is, you know, that was my plan when I came into this life, and that's why it happened. The other interesting little thing is from the more mundane side, which turns quickly strange. Pam and I met out in Oregon, and when we first met, this being Valentine's Day, we kind of focus on relationships and all that, and we formed a relationship immediately with each other, and we felt our chakras zip together like a Velcro zipper or something. So we knew something was up, and we immediately started talking about religion and politics and UFOs. I mean, everybody does that, right? So we covered those bases pretty quickly. And we were interested in spending more time with each other, and we then sought out some reasons to be together. And we had come across a woman named Ida Cannenberg, who lived not far from us there in Oregon, and she'd written some things in the book that I'd read at that time. And so we got this idea that maybe we would track her down, because her story was extraordinary as well, track her down and see whether she was for real or expose her as a fraud or something. And so we went to her. She invited us over. And she sat us down, and we were just asking some questions because of her background. She had a long history of interface, apparently, with off-planet intelligence. And we asked some questions like, do the ETs believe in God, and do they have religions, and where does Jesus fit into this, and, you know, things like this. And at one point, she kind of held her head down and kind of shook it like something was going on. She said, "Whoa, someone wants to talk to you. Would you like to sit down?" And we didn't know what was going on, but some seemingly other intelligence came forward at that time and started talking to us and said things like, "You come with questions, the gentleman first." And we started asking some questions. These sessions went on for quite some time, or an extended period of time, but it might have been even that very first session that one of the questions that I asked was, how can people like Pam and me, who have computer background, be of best service to this planet in this time of her need? And the answer came back, we need publishers. And we said, well, why do you need publishers? There's plenty of publishers in the world. And the voice said, they're not putting out the information accurately. They're not putting out what needs to be put out there. We need someone to speak the truth and get it out there. And we said, well, how would we know what to publish? We're not experts in any of this. And the answer was, it will come. And it has over the 20-some years that we've been doing this. We've never solicited an author. Everything has always come to us. And we've had beautiful experiences encountering all kinds of interesting folks and bringing out information that we think is as close to the truth as we can get it. So at that point, we just kind of subconsciously said, well, I guess we're going to be publishers, and we started down that route. So that's how it happened on that level.
Now you lived what, in Oregon or Washington? Where did you live then?
We were living in the Willamette Valley of Oregon, around Portland and southwest of there.
And so what took you to North Carolina?
Well, you ask so many questions that have such interesting answers. You might even want to have Pam talk about her and her sister and her map dowsing. You want to take that, Pam?
Yeah, go ahead, Pam.
We felt a need to bring our families closer together. Brian's sister was here. My sister was in Florida. My mother was in Pennsylvania. And Brian's family, part of that, has passed on. And we were map dowsing to see where we should go. And we kept arguing because the map kept saying 40 miles around Asheville. And we go, no, but we thought we would go here. We thought we would go there. And it kept going 40 miles around Asheville. And so we came to a conference one summer, and my sister called me and said we got a home equity loan. And we never had any other discussion. We knew we were going to look for land at that point. And we drove down from Washington from the conference to look for land, and we looked around Asheville. We didn't find anything at all. And we thought, okay, well, we'll just come back. And we drove down off the mountains about 40 miles from Asheville to a place where friends, a city where we're living now, where friends were had just moved. And there was an advertisement for a house, and it kept calling me. And we drove up the driveway, and we said, we're home, to make a long story short. So we were really led here.
Wow.
So we sold everything and moved here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just, okay, it spoke to
it's
you.
It's a very healing place, Lavendar. It's, you know, the mountains are feminine, the mountains are old, and it's amazing how many people we come in contact with who said, I was led to come here. I don't know why I'm here, but I was led to come here.
Well, I know that the Asheville area is loaded with star seeds. So do mm-hmm. you feel that the people that live there, are there a lot of awake star seeds in your area?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, we were kind of surprised because although we followed the spiritual guidance, we had this feeling of why should we, you know, move into rural conservative South? I mean, what's there for us? And we're going to be surrounded by rednecks and stupid people. What are we doing? But we found in the time that we have been here that the group of people that we do things with on a spiritual and galactic basis are deeper and richer than the ones that we were working with out in Oregon.
We also found that the stereotypical redneck, you know, it's a stereotype that's not fair, too. So we found that out, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, where I live, that's what I'm surrounded by.
Conservative people?
I'm surrounded by pickup trucks, guns, and beer.
Yeah.
Lots of beer.
We're surrounded by that, too. But I think, you know, it's a interesting mix of people coming together. And I don't think that's an accident.
Yeah. The sense that we got was that we were being moved to where we needed to be, so we just followed that.
So Brian, have you had any direct contact with beings from galactic places? Do you have anything you'd like to share with our audience about something that you've encountered?
Sure. Both Pam and I had early experiences. She'll cover hers, and ours are not as extraordinary as those of many people that we have talked with or published books for in the intervening years. But when I was a teenager, I was working as a camp counselor at a boys' camp about 40 miles west of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I was on roving guard duty one night with another friend. The two of us were watching these cabins out in this open area. And something rather bizarre was moving across the sky at some distance, and kind of move and stop and move and stop. We'd never seen anything like that, so we just kind of kept an eye on it and made some speculations about what it might be that were totally wrong. It eventually disappeared going east, and we thought nothing about it until it started coming back, and this time it was heading right towards us, and when it got to be about 100 yards away, it stopped above these pine trees, and we could see it was about the size of a city bus, and it had lights down the sides, like portholes or something, and there was kind of a orange, yellowish, reddish glow underneath it, and without further ado, this blue light came out and illuminated the two of us, and subsequently to that, there was missing time, I think, because my next memory was just scrambling through the woods on the way back to the counselor's lodge, and we all turned out and watched the skies all night and didn't find anything, and they started telling jokes about 4 in the morning, so the next day on we went, but the next night, the same thing happened to two other counselors that were on their way back to the counselor's lodge about 10 o'clock at night, and this thing centered over them. The blue light came down and kind of froze them in position on this bridge that they were on, and eventually light turned off and the thing moved off, and those two guys came stumbling into the counselor's lodge with tears in their eyes and pointing at the sky and blubbering just like we had the night before. And so we went out and stayed out all night looking for things again, and nothing happened. But what that meant to me as a teenager was that our education is incomplete, that there are things going on that we should know about, but we don't know about, and nobody is telling us about it. And we found out, you know, Pam, too, anybody goes through experiences like this finds out pretty quickly that there are two classes of people in the world, those you can talk about these things with and those that you cannot. And you don't have very pleasant experiences making mistakes on who's in which group, because you get ridiculed, and so you get kind of hesitant to say anything, and you make sure that you can talk about this before you get too much into it. So you develop some abilities to kind of detect the receptivity to these topics before you get too far into it. But apparently when Pam and I finally met, we had finally tuned those abilities so that we knew we could talk about these things with each other. Pam, why don't you talk about what happened to you and your family?
Yes, Pam. You had some experiences as a child, right?
Right. Well, and you'll find this very interesting when I tell you this story. We were coming home from my sister's graduation from high school in 1962, and it was, as we were driving through our neighborhood, it was as if you saw a full moon out of the corner of your eye. It was that bright. And then my father was actually watching this, and he stopped at the bottom of our street, and the craft was hovering about 50 feet above the telephone pole, completely silent, and I don't remember if my parents, well, that's another story. But anyway, my feeling was at the time, I said, thank you for showing me yourself, because I know you've been around me my whole life. And I didn't feel, I felt so much love coming from that ship, so I had a very different experience from Brian. But at the same time, my consciousness kicked in as well. And I said, I feel good, and I feel this is good, but I don't want to see any faces in the windows. So I had a very human, physical experience, and then my spirit was also attached to that. And the ship looked very similar to the ships, the Pleiadian ships that Billy Meyer always took pictures of.
That's because they were.
Yeah, right. I knew you'd get a kick out of that.
Well, you know, I told you earlier how Pleiadian you are, and so as you were talking, I went, "Oh yeah, there's that scout ship."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've had a lot of experiences over the years with the publishing business of just amazing coincidences, amazing interactions that we just had to, you know, point our eyes skyward and say thank you, or this is amazing. So it's been an interesting ride.
But we don't have these beings coming into our three-dimensional awareness in our bedrooms at night, and we don't get carried off. Or if we do, we don't retain memories of it.
Mm-mm. And I think recently we were talking about that, and I think one reason for that, and we discussed that a little bit among ourselves earlier, we are, as a publishing house, we are representing like the cog in the wheel. And we are the center listening to all kinds of people's presentations, their experiences, and presenting that to other people. And we remain, you know, non-judgmental about anything. And I think if we were so attached to our particular experience, we may not have that neutrality
mm-hmm.
that we offer.
Yeah, because we would then come out with some perspective that, well, we know because we saw them and they look like this and they're from here and that's the truth and everybody else is mistaken. So we can't really go to that point. You know, the things that happened to us at those times and subsequently have been so unusual that we, both of us, had to get to the point where who are we to ever judge anyone else's reported experience?
Well, yes, and I think that, you know, everybody has their particular assignment to the tapestry. And as we were discussing before, you know, when I read Human by Day, Zeta by Night, and I was reading what was happening aboard ship, I went, that's exactly the way it is. I had memory of it. I knew it. It was like so clear to me. And so when I interviewed Judy on our show, and we got a lot of listeners, a lot of people started emailing me saying, oh, I remember I was aboard ship. That's true. That happened.
Mm-hmm.
Then I realized, and then I went to my source and said, well, how many people are experiencing Human by Day, ET by Night? You know, and at first that somebody said, well, thousands, and they said, well, probably millions. I mean, a lot. We're a huge group now. You know, it's like, what? And so I'm finding some of my clients that are coming, they have that double life, you know, Human by Day and ET by Night.
Mm-hmm.
Because out of body, they're doing so much work in areas of keeping atomic power at bay, helping
mm-hmm.
people cross over, doing
mm-hmm.
the exchange program with the Crystal Indigo children, knowing and learning more about the walk-ins and the drop-bys. And I mean, it just gets, you can overload yourself with all that's going on. So how
mm-hmm.
do you stay grounded? I'll tell you how. You get your little shots before you come back into body and you don't remember.
Yeah.
No, that's it. No, that's it.
It would be too much.
It's too much. I have a lot of people go, well, why can't I remember the Teton meetings? And I tried to explain to them that they couldn't function if they did. And these are meetings, you know, that happen twice a year inside the mountain in Wyoming at the Tetons in January
mm-hmm.
and July. You know, 144,000 beings are taken there every 45 minutes for a 7-day period. Some people do remember glimpses, others don't. And
mm-hmm.
it's not important to remember. If you're living your life, if your destiny path is up and running, then that's the important thing to know, is that
mm-hmm.
you're living your life, you've got joy in your life, and you're here doing exactly what you came here to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know why you came here, then you need to find out and get on board, because this is the most exciting time to be on the planet. I mean, a lot of people that have come back to be during this time, they stayed out of body for a long time. Why? They were waiting for this huge evolutionary jump. They weren't going to come until things were aligned so that they would have these experiences. And disclosure is going to be in our lifetime. It's not
mm-hmm.
going to be like we thought. Disclosure is going to be simultaneous. It's going to be happening all over the globe at once, and we will not need the White House to tell us anything.
No, they won't know anything.
They won't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is why a lot of the resistance to the paradigm shift goes on.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I noticed that you sent me something that says the fifth world paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about this. Start at the beginning of it, kind of walk us through it, and then show us where, if there's a website they need to go to, be sure and give that. But go ahead and tell us what the fifth world paradigm is.
Okay. We should talk about what the phrase the fifth world means. It is a handle for the world we're going through this transitional period that we all know that we're in here. The reference goes back to the Hopi Indians of the Southwest, and they have a prophecy stone that is ancient, and it shows humanity walking along a path, and then there's a split, which is recognized as this point in time, and there's two ways to go forward, and one is the way it's been done before, and that's the fourth world, the competitive and warlike, nasty, scarcity-based, you know, all that stuff that we've been doing, you know, pollution and everything else. That line comes to kind of an abrupt end, but there's another choice that lifts up and goes further, and that is indicated as being a world that is sustainable and balanced and conceived in spiritual strength. And the Hopis, in their tradition, have a number of different worlds that are kind of eras of existence on this planet, and the current one that is falling apart is the fourth world, and the one that's emerging is the fifth world. So we adopted many years ago the fifth world as a phrase that is a good organizing tool, and the Hopi prophecy is kind of a way to encapsulate a lot of thinking about what is going on here. So from that point of view, what is happening here is that the fourth world is disintegrating and everything that's not sustainable is falling apart. And there is a new and better way, maybe it's an ancient way, of living that is emerging, and that's the fifth world. So it gets back to the next question, what is a paradigm? I think most of us understand that, but a paradigm is a set of mutually reinforcing understandings about the way things work. And in the fourth world, it's things like competition brings the cream to the surface, and we can all do better as long as we all take care of ourselves, and you know, everybody grab as much as you can, and you know, that whole thing. And it's hard to change any of that. And the fifth world needs a different paradigm, and that paradigm has something to do with there being abundance and for everybody, that we don't need to work in a scarcity economy anymore, that we need to be stewards of the earth and take care of things and keep sustaining the earth and making it better so that there's a future for our grandchildren and their grandchildren's grandchildren and all these kinds of ideas. So the fifth world paradigm is a collection of these ideas. So what we've been doing over the last many years is observing the pieces of this paradigm coming together. And as we see pieces of this, we categorize the particular thing that we're looking at in one of the seven different areas of collected information that we have at the fifthworld.com site, which is where the fifth world paradigm can be found. And yeah, it's 5thworld.com. And if you go there and you you click on the transparent spinning globe, which is the representation of the fifth world, you'll get to a graphic that has seven different areas, like wisdom and knowledge and new history and things like that. And in each one of those, there's a chronologically ordered set of postings that are building our new understanding. And so the paradigm is the new set of understandings that are also mutually reinforcing. And so what we've been doing is trying to document that over the years so that people who are new to this and don't have any idea how to think about living in the world that's coming, I'll have a place where they can just go and spend a good long time in there and see this and see that and begin to put it all together in a different way.
Great.
So what we're going through here is a paradigm shift.
Yeah, right.
And a paradigm shift, everything has to shift at once, which is why it's very difficult. And it's why there's this resistance, which is what I started out saying, was that the current fourth world experts are not interested in a fifth world because they don't know anything about it. They're not experts in the fifth world.
Mm-hmm.
What they know how to say and talk about is going to be increasingly irrelevant. So they are not interested. In fact, they're opposed to this. So a lot of times when you talk about anything like, oh, I saw a UFO or anything that suggests that maybe the world is different than what we've been told, you'll get a lot of resistance from the people whose well-being may be badly affected by emergence into a more sustainable world.
Well, some of the good news that I've had lately is that when we do start having more shifts of consciousness and things are happening simultaneous with walk-ins coming to the planet, people that are being removed, I don't think that we're going to have too much resistance after a while. So that's the good news about that is some of these some of the bloodlines are being erased. Some people are being just changed overnight, more and more starseed or awakening. Pam, I'd like to ask you, you said something about authentic crop circles and the evidence of advanced benefic communicators coming and doing some work. Can you give us a little bit more insight to some of this work? You were talking about bottles of water. Can you tell us about that?
Right. Several years ago, we had two people go over to England, and they go into the authentic crop circles where the energy is genuine and the plants are bent over and not broken over. And they've taken sacred water into the center of the crop circle, and they meditate with it, and they ask for the powers that be that brought in this crop circle to infuse it with the energy of the crop circle. And we have 81 of these now since, I forget what year.
2002.
Yeah. And so every year we have a new crop, and every year we have a new set of energy, highly energized water. So we have been selling these. And these... For me, it's just amazing that these crop circles are coming down, becoming more and more spectacular every year, and it's still not widely spread. And again, that's the paradigm shift that needs to take place. They're sending us messages. They're sending us energetic messages for the Earth. They're sending healing messages to the Earth, and still we are have our heads in the sand, basically. But a lot of these crop circle essences that we are selling do various things for your health. They do various transformative, they have transformative properties for our transition coming up, and they're widely varied, obviously, since we have 81 of them.
Well, you know, when I was talking to you about your charts, I said, look at the center. This is your personal crop circle.
Yeah, I like
this
that.
Is your energy stamp.
Yeah,
well,
I like that,
you know what? It's like that's what you're saying is in this water. It's probably just a step up every time you use the water, right? It's a step up.
Right.
Yeah. There's been a very interesting development in the last year and a half or so that's related to this. It has really focused attention on one particular crop circle and its benefits and energies and so on. And,
which crop circle is that?
This is the August 12th, 2001 Milk Hill Formation. It's in the books that you read by Judy Carroll. It's on the cover of the Zeta Message.
Oh, yes. Okay.
900 feet across. It's huge.
Okay.
409 perfect circles. Each one is a prime number of inches in diameter.
Uh-huh.
And it appeared overnight. And Judy and Helene... right before this appeared, were asking their nighttime buddies in the upstairs craft, wouldn't it be really good if you guys came down and gave us a crop circle formation that was just undeniably wonderful, and that would enable us to really start the conversation here and talk about it and, you know, do something that couldn't be done by drunks in the dark, and that'd be a wonderful thing. Could you please do that? And they had a friend of theirs, Brett Parrott, who was in England at the time, and they were not coordinating this, but he was sitting out in the Milk Hill field, and he was asking the crop circle makers to put a very definitive pattern into the Milk Hill field in a similar kind of way, that this would be just so definitive and obviously not made by hands that it would really break open the whole discussion. And so he did his meditation thing, and eventually he went home and got up in the morning and looked at the field, and it was bare. There was nothing going on. So he got disappointed and started heading home. And about noon, he stopped at a pub or someplace. He's looking on the news there and says, "Wow, big, huge crop circle in the Milk Hill field, da-da-da-da." And he said, "Oh, boy, what is this? You know, I was there. There wasn't anything." He traces his steps back, and he goes to where he was. He just thought he was in the Milk Hill field. He was actually on the other side of the hill, and the real Milk Hill field is where the crop circle appeared. And it was there, and it was huge, and it appeared overnight. And as a result of that, he knew that it was something amazing, and so did Judy and Helene. And it seems to be that these three folks were perhaps involved in the request that was delivered in this crop circle. So Judy and Helene would ask their people what was the meaning of this formation, they were told that this is a tool for healing the planet. It's a gift to humanity. And so with that understanding, we began to focus on this, and we began a process whereby we would gather with other people on a regular basis.
I think there's some interference on that line. Can you hear this better? Is this all right?
Yeah, the work. I'm good. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There's some kind of static or something on there. In any case, we decided that learning about some other tools that are available, like intentional manifestation and mastermind thinking and things like this, the power of human thought and intention, that we should be doing something with this crop circle. And going back to the moment in time when that occurred, it did seem to be absolutely defining, in terms of there's no way that anybody working in the dark without lights overnight could have made this in the period of time that it was made in. And there's magnetic effects, and there's, you know, it goes on and on and on. It's clearly beyond being made by humans. So why was there no discussion of it? Well, there may have been at some point, or begun to, but within a month, 9/11, 2001. You go from 8/12 to 9/11. And a month later, you have this big thing. Everybody's talking about that. And then you get into the terrorist thing, and the Arabs, and the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and da-da-da-da-da-da. It's taken 10 years to kind of clear that out of our focal point in the public discourse. So there really wasn't any opportunity in the public awareness to really talk about something like that, especially since it was, again, another piece of the paradigm shift. You can't. There is no explanation for these things. They're not tornadoes, you know. They're not, you know, genetic patterns in the crop. You know, these things are beyond our understanding. There's something very bizarre going on here, and it needs some attention. But there's no explanation within the fourth world of these things. So that couldn't be discussed. So 10 years have gone by, and so now we're working with it, and we started working with people around the world. On this, using this pattern in various ways, and we began seeing whether we could all visualize the pattern. The pattern seems to want to rotate. It's like a windmill. The big arms rotate in one direction, and they kind of trail the little edges. It looks like it ought to be counterclockwise rotating. Six big symmetric arms, 409 circles. And we started having groups that were using this, that are mentally using this to project peace and well-being and manifesting the fifth world, imagining what it would be like to live in a world without war that was sustainable, and the endangered species are coming back, and everybody's well-fed, and you know, on and on and on. I mean, what would this fifth world be like? And using those deeply felt images of what the fifth world might be like in conjunction with this imaging, this big global healing mandala that came down in that field, rotating, and we worked with it in various ways, and eventually it became kind of clear that there's a connection between this pattern and the chakras of the individuals, and maybe the chakras of the planet as well. So we began to be guided to put colors into the rendition of this pattern, and now the color in the center is the violet color of the crown chakra, and then it progresses through the various colors that are commonly associated with the chakras until you get to the red of the base chakra, and that's at the tip of each of these big arms. And so with these colors then, we also started getting into computer animation so that people could see this visually. And these animations are at another website I like to guide people to. And that is, again, spelled with the digit 5, not spelling it out, but Fifth World Fund, FUND.org, is the site. And you'll find their visualizations, animations of this pattern in two different forms. There's kind of a clockwise one and there's a counterclockwise one. And we don't need to get into all the details, but there's just beautiful animations that are going on there. So where that has led is that now we have people go to the site and they register there, and they can register as a visioneer or as a steward. And what the difference there is the visioneers are people who are willing to step up to the plate and take some initiative and talk to people and recruit people and gather groups together and coordinate with the rest of us as we do these global healing meditations. And a steward is someone who is willing to be involved and participate when these times come. They can't necessarily organize things, but they're willing participants. So you have these two levels of involvement, and people sign up there one way or the other, and then they're informed as to what the activities are that are going on and when we're doing things. So since this is a global process, we're now involved in a dozen or so different countries around the world, and we needed a way to coordinate the timing of all of this, so we naturally latched on to the full moons and the new moons. And at those times of the month, we gather our people around the world to gather in real and virtual circles and work together to envision a better world. And so that's what we typically do, and this is happening right now around the world. And every time we do it, it's just amazing what happens. And to finish this off, getting back to water for a moment, what we found was that if we have a group that is in a circle and they're imaging the great mandala, which is in the center of the circle and slowly rotating in the center of the circle of people, and if we take bottles of water that are nothing unusual and we place them in the middle of that, that by the time the process is over, those water bottles have been highly charged with some kind of a high vibration energy that we don't totally understand yet. And how do we know it's there? Well, we talked about how we used map dowsing to find our way from Oregon to North Carolina. Once you get into dowsing, you know it's not only about where to drill the well, but it's about being aware of natural energy flows and, for example, knowing when something is energized and when it's not, and answering questions about things like that. So if you take an empty bottle of water and fill it with fresh, clean well water, for example, and you tighten it up and you put the your pendulum over it, it'll just stand there inert and unmoving. And if you check out all your bottles, they're all like that. You put them in the center, and you go through this group process, and you rotate the great mandala and so on. After you finish this, then you take each of these bottles and you put the pendulum over it. It just spins up like a top, and it'll spin in the same direction that you rotated the mandala during the process. And what really is amazing is that the next thing that you can do is take another bottle that has inert water in it, and your pendulum doesn't swing around it. And you take a single drop from the energized bottle and put it into the second bottle and put your pendulum over the second bottle, it spins up like a top. And so you have a lifetime supply of this, whatever it is. It seems to be a high energy thing. It's like raising our energy levels to higher levels, which I think is part of what this transition is from the fourth to the fifth world. It's an energy-based process of raising the frequency of our vibrations.
So it's an energy stamp.
It's an energy stamp, and it's a self-propagating energy stamp. And one experiment that I did with it, since we're trying to figure out what do you do with it, you know, how, you know, it doesn't come with a book of instructions, so got to kind of figure out things. So 2 months ago, we have a hot tub out in the back here, and I drained it out, and I cleaned it out and put fresh water in there. But I didn't put any chemicals in it whatsoever. I put one drop of this energized water in there, and then I sat back with daily use and so on, no change of usage of the tub anyway, but just to see what happens. And the first thing you know is you take a pendulum over to the hot tub, and the whole hot tub spins up the pendulum. It just spins like a top when you're in the vicinity of the hot tub. And the next thing is that the water has stayed absolutely clear as a crystal ever since. There's no scum around the side. There's no cloudiness. There's no stink. There's no chemicals. There's nothing in the water. It's just absolutely clear, and it stays clear. And it's been going on for 2 months.
Wow.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, that's where that's gone. So it is something. My theory is that the energy has been raised to the point where the bacteria don't live in it. I mean, I think that's how it's working.
Or it's balanced bacteria.
Somehow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or good bacteria or something. But it's not turning into the kind of awful things that hot tubs often turn into.
Well, I think this new paradigm we're going into is more about balance, and mm-hmm. I think it makes sense that maybe there might be some bad bacteria in there, but it balances out with the good bacteria.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It's all theory, obviously. It's an experiment on our
mm-hmm.
part.
Mm-hmm.
So on your website, people can order this water?
Well, not yet. But what we have to figure out, and I don't have an absolute answer here yet, but what I'm intuitively led to here is that part of this transition into the fifth world is that we need different economic models, and we've built in the fourth world this idea that everything is scarce, and so everything has a price, and we've got to, you know, work for the man to get those few pennies to pay our bills because everything is scarce, and, you know, that whole idea I think is probably faulty, and it's probably not sustainable over the long term. And you look at something like this energy water, and you take one bottle, and you take one drop of it, and you make another bottle. Well, isn't that interesting? How much did you pay for that? Let's make another one. Oh, we can make more from each. Well, how much did you pay for that? Well, you know, it's a different kind of thing. It's like natural abundance. It makes itself. And so what I'm intuitively led to believe, and I haven't absolutely come to this conclusion because, you know, one has to pay one's own bills, and it seems like this is a saleable thing. But I'm suspecting that maybe it's not supposed to be sold. It's only supposed to be given away. And we may sell the bottles and the instruction manuals and things like that around it. But the water itself, I think, probably ought not to be sold, but everybody that wants to use it should probably be involved in the process of making it.
Well, we have also arrived at a location here in North Carolina. As we said, we're sitting on a lot of crystal energy, and we have a falls here and a stream that has very pure water, and it runs over granite crystals. So we also think that, you know, not everybody has water like that, and I don't think it would be good to try to do this from chlorine water coming out of the tap. But, yeah, so we're in the process mm-hmm. of trying to do the best thing for...
Yeah, we're sorting it out. So what
well,
about?
I certainly want some.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll send you a special bottle.
Okay, thank
just
you.
Just for you, okay,
oh,
because
wow.
you asked. And then with that comes the responsibility of experimenting with it, giving us the feedback, sharing with other people, helping other people make their own bottles, on and on and on.
Well, what I'll do, I'll experiment with it. And in fact, I'll put some Giza, a little Giza crystal in with it. And I'll send you guys some Giza crystals, too.
Okay.
No, that'd be great.
That'd be good.
Let's spin this higher.
Let's do this.
What we've been doing is we carry the bottle of water with us and drop it into streams, drop it into ponds, and just try to add that pure energy into any water source around the planet.
It all goes into the oceans, and all the oceans are connected. I mean, it has something to do with transforming the world and the energy of the world.
Well, that's when I was given these Giza crystals. They were charged, Cairo, Egypt, and for 2 days by the Pleiadians, and they gave them back to me. And I said, what am I to do with them? It says, distribute them to people and the planet. They're this.
Okay.
They're the balancing beam between man and nature. And I said, well, how powerful are they? And they said, we have nothing on your planet to measure them with.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but I need to tell people something. I said, well, just tell them that it's 7 million times celestial power, and that they have a mind of their own, and then they know where to go. And so, therefore, when I travel, I give them to people. I plant them near trees. I put them in oceans. I put them in streams, and they just take off and do what they need to do.
Right.
So it sounds like your water's the same kind of
thing.
I think it's the same kind of thing. Another little thing I did, Pam and I did this. We have a stream run through the property here, the fall that you mentioned, and I went upstream. I put a drop of water into the stream, and then I went downstream 100 feet or so, and I put my pendulum over the water, and it was just dead until the water that was inoculated by the drop arrived there, and then the pendulum started spinning up. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, it travels downstream. But it suggests also that it doesn't travel upstream, so we have to do this on a regular basis, especially near the headwaters of streams and rivers and things like that, on a regular basis. You know,
it's got that up spiral spin to it. It doesn't have a down spiral. It has an up spiral only.
There's two things here. Now, you know, the world, we're taught that it's all oneness and we got to get out of duality, but there's left and there's right, and there's up and there's down, and there's white and there's black, and there's hot and there's cold. I mean, there's always these two kind of polarities. So the one that came down there in the Milky Hill formation seems to like to flow in a counterclockwise direction. And yet when we extracted the pattern, it was easy enough to flip that and work with the other one that rotates the other direction. And so we're just beginning this last full moon. We did the first creation of the clockwise form of the energized water. And it seems, if you bear with me for just a second here, we're kind of pushing out the edges of our understanding here, and we have to kind of reason and intuit our way through a lot of this. But if you remember anything about physics and electromagnetics, there's a right-hand rule that says if you pass electricity in the direction of your fingers on the right hand, that you will induce a magnetic pole in the direction of the thumb in your right hand. That's called the right-hand rule. And I reasoned or intuited that if the right-hand rule operates in the physical world, probably there's a left-hand rule that operates in the subtle world. In which case, if the energy, what is electricity? No, but we know about Qigong and moving energy from the body. So if we move our energy by our energies from our body, our chakra energies, in the direction, like in a circular movement, in the direction of the fingers on our left hand, we should be inducing a field. What is it, magnetism? I don't think so, but something like that, that's akin to that, but on the subtle side. We're calling it the intentional manifestation field, for want of anybody else naming it. And it induces, if you move energy in that direction. It induces this field in this direction of your left-hand thumb. So where does this go? This goes back to the people in the circle and how that starts. And if you start with moving your chakra energies down the front and up in the back, and you follow that with your left fingers, then there's a field that's induced to move through your chakra system from left to right. And if you're in a circle, the person to your right will receive that energy from their left. As they're doing the same thing, they will take that energy, make it stronger, and pass it to their right, and it goes around the circle. It eventually comes back from your left, and you make the complete circle, and the whole thing becomes energized at the group level, which is like a second level of the individual energy movements. This is a group process. And then when you follow that flow of energy with your left fingers and observe where your left thumb is, that is a downward pulling energy form. This is a torus. If you get into the geometry of the shape of a donut, and the energy is moving towards the center down, it pulls cosmic healing energy down into the center of that, and it energizes the chakras of the people in the circle. Now, I say all that just to lead into, well, what happens when you go clockwise? Well, when you go clockwise, you move the energies in your chakra system up in the front and down in the back. And if you follow that with the fingers of your left hand, you find that you're inducing the intentional manifestation field in the opposite direction. So it comes in from your right and exits your personal chakra system to the left. If you follow that around the circle in the great torus shape and comes back to you from your right, and you follow that direction of energy movement with your left fingers and observe your left thumb, that's an upward-going fountain of energy. And what we then conclude from all of this, and it's a speculation, because you can't really prove anything, but it's a bit of a gnosis to it. Kind of, oh, yeah, that's it. That's how it works, without actually proving it. But it seems that when you go clockwise, the energy of the people in the group are combining to form an upward-moving flame or a torrent of energy that goes in the various colors of the chakras, and that goes up into the upper reaches of the atmosphere and back into the earth in order to help the earth heal. And so what we basically conclude at the end of all this is that there's two forms of this thing. The counterclockwise one that we started with is for personal healing. And it's pulling down cosmic healing energies from above, healing our chakras. And the clockwise one takes energies that we have in the circle and helps heal others. We heal the earth and other people with that. So anyway, this is all at the edge of our experimentation and understanding right now, but it feels to those of us who are working with it that it's legitimate and it's real, and it's going somewhere, and it's going to make a big splash, and it's a tool for helping the transition from the fourth to the fifth world.
I love it. I just love all of this. Well, I'm looking at the time, and
yeah,
we're coming to the end of our interview, but we want you to come on our show on Tuesday so
yeah,
that you'll
yeah.
be able to, we'll play this recording, and then we'll open it up to the telephone lines where people can call in and ask questions. Is that okay?
That's great.
Well, I have really, really enjoyed talking to both of you. I hope to see you personally one day. And and I know that when I get ready to publish my Crack Between the Worlds, I will be calling you.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Or you know, rather than wait until we see each other personally, let's just see each other on a ship tonight.
Yeah, that'd be okay, that's a date. And I'll be getting some Giza crystals to you, and you get some of that wonderful water to me. You know, we had someone on our show a couple of weeks ago, Kayla Fox, who makes crop circle jewelry. And so she's taken some of my Gizas to experiment with some of her jewelry. So now I'm hoping that she's listening to the show tonight, maybe she'll contact you. That's Kayla Fox. All of this crop circle energy is happening, and we have Dr. Meg, who takes a group there in the summer. We have Colin Andrews, who comes on our show. We have a lot of people that are connected to the crop circle energies.
They're so amazing.
It's just, and thank you so much for the work you do and all these years you've devoted to putting the information out about different subjects having to deal with galactic affairs and metaphysical topics. I personally want to thank you and say to you, this is the exciting time to be alive and to be a publisher.
It's why we're here.
So, anyway, I'll say back to you, Ariel.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lavender.
Bye-bye.
Well, Lavender, it's Ariel.
And I'm here.
I think we have Brian and Pamela on the switchboard, but I'm not sure if they're here yet. So as soon as Sahar picks up and make sure we know who they are. I do see a couple of phone numbers here that look familiar, though. So I'm just going to pick up and see if this is really who I think it is. Is this Joseph calling from 707?
It certainly is.
I thought I recognized your number.
Well, thank you for the recognition.
Yes.
I have to tell you all, I have been sick for 3 weeks. I don't know what's going around this little town up here, but people are just so ill, and I have not been able to call in. And tonight I thought, well, I'll just listen. And I just listened to that conversation. I feel like I could get up and run a mile right now. Whatever was coming through, that was amazing. I want to meet those people. I want to spend some time with them. I am so looking forward to that. So,
well, you're just in luck, because I see now that they are indeed on the switchboard, so I'm going to pick them up, and you can talk to Brian and Pamela. Just a minute here, I'm going to get the mic open. Hello, Brian and Pamela. Welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Hello.
Well, hello. Thanks for having us.
Well, thank you so much for calling. We already have a caller that is just, I suppose you heard what Joseph said.
Yes.
So, yeah. Joseph, your mic is still open, so do you have a comment or question for Brian and Pamela?
Yeah. How quickly can we get together?
How fast can we get to the airport?
Well, we don't have an airport here, but it's about 50 miles away. It'll take me a little while. I've been a Reiki master for 30 years.
Okay.
And I'm listening to you talking about things spiraling in one direction and spiraling in the other direction, and I thought, this is ancient information.
Yeah.
My teacher studied directly with Mrs. Takata, who brought it here from Japan, and my teacher taught me everything she knew, and every time I look at the symbols, it is so exciting to me because they're star charts. The symbols tell us how we got here, and how we get back to where we came from. And I'm sitting here, I've never had anybody I could discuss this with, because nobody understands it. They think it's Reiki's for curing hiccups, hemorrhoids, and hernias or something, but it's not. It is profound. I had a student one time when I was living in Santa Barbara, and she was a Tibetan nun. And so she wanted to know what Reiki was. So I began teaching her, and she just looked at me and she said, "Do you have permission to teach this?"
Hmm.
And I said, "I beg your pardon?" And she said, "Well, you have to have permission to teach this." And I said, "Well, what do you know?" She said, "Well, this is our enlightenment technique."
Hmm.
And I said, "Oh, and who should I talk to?" And she said, "Well, the Dalai Lama, of course." Well, shortly after that, I was in New York for a ceremony, and the Dalai Lama and Bishop Tutu and the President of Costa Rica were all being honored, and I was invited to come to the ceremony. And so I went up afterwards just to shake hands and congratulate them. And the Dalai Lama took my right hand in both of his hands, and he looked at me and grinned and winked, as if to say, you have the permission.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
So I see fits in. I see how it fits in with what you all are talking about. This is so exciting. We have to spend some time together. That's for sure.
Sounds good to us.
Good.
You know, when you were talking about the star charts, we recently heard a man from Hawaii talk about the ancient Hawaiians who would get in their canoes and travel, and
yes.
they would create these chants that related to the stars, and they chanted them over and over again. And then when they got to their destination, whether they were there a year or 500 years, when they wanted to go home, they reversed the chants, and that's how they got home.
Absolutely.
Ancient ways.
Very ancient information. I lived in Hawaii for a couple of years, and I wanted to know more about the kahunas and their religion and their philosophy, and I went to the Bishop Museum in Honolulu, and I was told that there was a man, a very old man there, who is their, you know, consultant, and so they brought him down, and we began talking, and he said, "Let us go have dinner together." And we went and had a meal, and he said, "You know more about this than any kahuna I know on the island of Hawaii."
Hmm.
Wow.
He said, "Would you share with me?" And I said, "It would be my honor." I don't know why I've been entrusted. Yes, I do know why I've been entrusted. Lavendar told me when she did my chart. But it's time. It's really time now to get this, to bring this into high gear, and I can't believe I even feel like talking to you guys. I've been so sick, and I just feel like I could dance a jig right now.
Well, I'm really glad.
Me too. There's a purification. There's a purification process that's going on here in this little town. This is a very special place. Lavendar knows where I am, and it's very sacred, and it is being cleansed, and it just is, boy, I'm telling you, I'm cleansing, that's for sure.
Thank you so much for calling in.
May your health continue to improve.
Thank you so well. It will, I'm sure, and I do so look forward to meeting both of you.
Okay, great. We do too.
Well, I'll tell you
thank you so much.
Lavendar gets her bottle of water, she'll take a drop of it into another bottle of water and get that to you, and you can take that on a daily basis and help other people.
Sounds great. Well, we have some very sacred water here. We have the deepest and hottest hot springs in the world in this little town.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to put some of it in there and see what happens.
Yeah.
Give Mama a treat.
Yes.
There you go.
Well, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I love you all.
Thank you, Joseph. Okay. Well, I don't know if your ears were burning, Kayla, but we were talking about you earlier in the show. Welcome.
I did hear it. Thank you.
Okay, well, Brian and Pamela, this is Kayla Fox.
Hi, Kayla.
Well, I looked at your pictures, and I went, I know these people. I don't know where from.
Well, you better get up on the ship at night,
too. I have
too.
Such a resonance with your work and what you're saying. And, like Lavendar said, I've been working for a couple of years now making... vibrational elixirs, I call them, but from the crop circles, and I just think it's really exciting because we don't know all of the application yet, but we are just having amazing responses, and I think it's so exciting to find somebody else doing similar work. Because now I have someone who doesn't think I'm nuts.
Right.
No, we don't.
We need to work together on that. I mean, we have 81 of these, and we don't have any really good process for knowing what is expected from each one. What are they supposed to be used for?
No, I said we're pioneers, aren't we?
Well, see, that's what I've been working on. And so, yes, I would love to share what I have with you. I have ideas of publishing a book here, but, it could be more than that. So,
We'll have to be in contact.
I think it's very exciting. You can get on our website and contact us?
Yes, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Granted, I
really appreciate you. I just want to tell you that. I feel very validated just by knowing your information and what you've been doing. It kind of wakens another part of me. Is it? Come on, this is good.
Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah.
Shayla.
Yeah.
And vice versa. You know, I think it's so important we all stick together because we're really pushing the boundaries out, aren't we?
Exactly, and we all have some little aspect of it that if we, you know, put it together, then there's something that can help more people, help us, and you know, it's more truth energy, you know, because there's more information from different points of view.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is one of the things we were told early on in our history of working with what we might call off-planet intelligence. We were told that nobody gets the complete truth.
Right.
And if anybody tells you that they have that, you might as well just run the other direction.
But we were told
exactly.
that by putting the pieces of the puzzle together, that's where we would find all the links.
Well,
that's what I have been told, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I love
yes.
that.
It's like a jigsaw puzzle, and each of us has a piece. And we've
right.
got to get together before we see the picture.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Well, continue forward, and I'll be in touch with you.
Great.
Yeah.
We'll look forward to that.
Okay.
Thank
Good.
You.
We'll
Thanks
carry,
for your encouragement.
We'll carry on.
Yeah, you too, Kayla.
I just so enjoy this community. I can't tell you. It just every day something new, and I appreciate all of you behind the scenes. I just want to say that.
It means a lot to us. Really, it really does.
Yes. Okay. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you, Kayla.
Good to hear from you. Bye-bye. Yes.
Okay. We will.
Okay. Well, next we are going to hear from, where'd you go? There you are. We're going to hear from Ralph next. Hang on a second, Ralph. Okay. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey, everyone.
Hi, Ralph.
Good. I want to take an opportunity to wish everyone on the show lots of love on this day, not just because it's Valentine's Day, but it's a good opportunity to express love anyway. So
that's good.
Love is all you
need. Really great show. Really interesting information. I've never seen a crop circle outside of my computer.
Yeah.
And I look forward to having an experience with that. It's amazing what you're doing with the water, and I can't wait till you somehow make that available.
It's close. I was working on it today. But it's I was going to mention a website where a lot of these things we're talking about are coming together. It's granite-planet.net. All of the websites we've been talking about are linked at the high level at that site. It's kind of a portal site into activities that are related to what we're talking about. And one of them is the site that works with the water and the manifestation of the better world. And we're just putting the finishing touches in right now on the shopping cart and the rest of that, and putting together what we call a transition toolkit, which is a collection of materials that people can use to create their own quantities of these manifestation waters that we're talking about. So go to granite-planet.net and you'll get access to all these things.
Oh, great. Thank you very much, and I can't wait to actually get a drop of that water. That's all I need. I don't know. But
you only need one. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate all the good information and good vibes and lots of love to both of you.
Thanks. You too, Ralph.
Love to you too, Ralph.
Thanks, Ralph. Bye-bye. Well, that's, I mean, that's just amazing how one drop, it's like the fishes and the loaves, you know?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
That just, it just keeps replicating itself over and over again, which is what the Giza crystals will do that as well. And,
right.
And I'm sure that there's some common principle there that makes that happen. And I was thinking while you were describing how the water, you know, changes from inert to active. Did you happen to see in the movie? What was that man's name? The Japanese man, Emoto.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. So you're familiar. You've seen all that.
Yeah.
And
Emoto
how that
or
was,
something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh
huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that set the scientific precedent for showing the effect that intent has on water molecules.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah.
I've been searching for a shipping address to ship one of our bottles to him so he can analyze the internal structure of it. And I don't have a mailing address yet, but I will some point and let him work on it.
I believe that Lavendar has a friend who has worked with him, so...
Okay.
At some point, you probably want to ask her about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Lavendar, do you know who I'm talking about?
Yes. Yeah. I'll call Lynn. I'll let her know.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Great. Well, we are going to hear from our very precious Miss Belva. Hello, Belva. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hello,
I love
Belva.
The show. It was wonderful.
Well, good.
I had my first meeting with a Lord Saucer in the 1950s when I broke my fan belt on the highway leading to Palm Springs. And that's
okay.
When I met George Van Tassel and saw a giant rock for the first time.
Well, we want you to write your life story. Now, see, Belva, Brian and Pamela being publishers, you know, this is a great opportunity for you to write your life story. Because
I've been looking for a publisher, so I was very interested in everything they said. And we have special water here, as Lavendar knows.
Mm-hmm.
We call it Gillette water, and it's from Pikes Peak.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah.
Would be.
Very special.
Wow. And so are you, Belva.
She sounds like it.
Yeah. So, Belva is our resident health expert, and she helps people with their natural healing. And we're glad that you are back up and around. I know that you had a little slip and fall, but you sound like you're doing great, and we're so happy to have you with us again on the air.
I am doing very good. Thank you very much. I mean,
yes.
They thought I would die. I was supposed to die on October the 14th, and I knew that was not happening. So,
well, we're glad that you didn't.
I was too healthy for all the drugs they gave me. They said I'd be in the hospital 3 weeks. I was home in a week. So I'm really okay.
Good for you.
Well, we're glad to hear that, Belva, and we're glad that you called in to say hi on Valentine's Day. And
happy Valentine's Day, Belva.
Thank you.
And you take care of yourself, and we will be talking to you soon. Okay, sweetie?
Okay, good.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, well, those are all the questions that we had from callers. So, Brian and Pamela, is there anything else that you would like to talk about this evening? Perhaps you didn't get to in the interview?
Let's see. There are many, many topics to talk about. Let
Well, I want to thank you for having this radio program,
really.
Because I think, you know, what Kayla said, it's about us coming together. And these kind of radio programs allow people to do that because some people can feel so isolated. And when we share our stories, it's very powerful. So thank you both.
And, well, it is a calling and something that we do gladly, and certainly when you witness people coming together, and it seems like there is a certain type of magnetic harmonic associated with this particular community and show, that people find their way here, and then they find others who are part of their same soul group, and you know, we have a support forum where people can just express themselves, tell stories, teach, learn. It's networking, and it's Starseed supporting Starseed. So, and it's really great to watch. We have about, gosh, I think getting close to 600 members or more. I haven't really looked in about a month, but it could be more than that by now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it is growing, and each person has, like you said, their own piece of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And people that know me, they know that I'm a complete Star Trek fan. And there was actually an episode of Star Trek on that exact same principle, where everyone had a piece of a DNA puzzle. I don't know if you've seen a lot of Star Trek, but the pieces belonged to people that to cultures that were not getting along. And the thing to find the secret of what you know, what the puzzle looked like, the answer to the riddle, was that all of these people had to lay aside their differences and come together in unity with this purpose, and then each one contributed their piece, and the answer was revealed to them. And it just was so parallel to what you were saying.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's so important for us to honor ourselves, and I think sometimes we can move out of that, but to have faith that we are our own piece and that we are on the right path, and to keep holding the faith, I think, because I think the real world can intrude sometimes and throw us off course. Well, not the real world, you know, this illusion that we live in.
the 3D can do that.
The 3D.
You know, yes, and it's not how many times you get pulled off course, it's how many times you get back on course that counts.
Absolutely.
And each person, each member of our community has if you could think of it as holding a candle, and when all the candles come together, it really does light up the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the one mission that we all have in common is to raise the global consciousness, which is what you are doing with your Fifth World project, and getting people together with a common intent.
Mm-hmm.
It actually does affect the level of global consciousness, and the higher we can take it, the easier the shift will be.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
You know. So
well,
I really applaud what you're doing, and you know, giving a publishing chance to unknown authors who have great pieces of the puzzle.
Absolutely.
And it's really difficult in the mainstream to get your work acknowledged, let alone published.
Exactly.
So it's impossible, basically. The Fourth World experts are in control of the Fourth World, and they're not interested in the Fifth World kind of ideas, because, as I mentioned earlier, that makes them non-experts, and they're not interested in doing that. So they're going to preserve their own domain as best they can, and will not really allow the news outlets to cover the kinds of topics that we're talking about here. There's a laughter curtain that comes down, and the reporters and everybody else are afraid of being laughed at, and it's been that way for a long time. And in this day and age of Photoshop and home movies and all sorts of things, the whole idea of what is evidence becomes quite a question, because you can look at the YouTube and all over the place there's amazing footage of strange things flying in the sky and all that sort of thing, but each one of those could have been made on a home computer, and you don't know. So what we find is coming into this transition into a different world, that we, that part of this paradigm shift is that we have to shift the way that we know things. And in the past, what we thought was that if you take whatever it is into the lab and you exclude all the other factors and you put something on it and you take something off of it and you measure the difference, so then you've got a proof that the thing is connected and then you know something. And that's the scientific method. But that that is so old-fashioned now in so many ways. The whole scientific approach really has to be changed here. We know this from the quantum theories and experiments that have happened in recent times, where the observer and the intent of the observer affects what is being observed. And so that's one of the principles of the scientific method that we cannot support anymore, that the experiment has to be independent of the experimenter, and it's just not the case. And we start finding that there are other ways to know things, and the word gnosis comes in here in an interesting way. It's G-N-O-S-I-S, the old Greek word. And we all know this. This is where nobody told you, but you know. You sort of know in an inward way, or it's that when you make the aha moment. You know, who told you that? It's kind of some kind of an internal knowing. And when you come across this, each individual really has to pay some attention to that. And it's as valid as something coming out of the lab, maybe even more so.
Right.
When you look at some of the things that come out of labs here, and you ask, well, who's funding this research? Well,
right.
Big Pharma or somebody. I mean, do they have any interest? Yes. So there's a whole different way of knowing things that we're going to have to get into. So things are changing.
Well, and it's you know, I think it's a cycle. Because before modern science, people did use more of the esoteric arts, if you want to call it that, with intuition and
right.
Psychic abilities and just energy manifestations, which is the basis really of what most people would consider magic, is just knowing how to manipulate energy.
Mm-hmm.
But then science comes along, and then that's the modern thing, and the old way is outdated, and now we're coming back into where science is not enough, and
mm-hmm.
and it really has to be a balance point where
mm-hmm. right.
where science and spirit are equally recognized and balanced. And that was at one point the pinnacle of Atlantean society.
Mm-hmm.
Having science and spirit in balance, and then when the science got ahead, look what happened.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that is not going to happen again, because there are plenty of Atlanteans back now, and
mm-hmm.
that's their code, is never again. So
never again.
I think that we're going to get it right this time.
Mm-hmm.
And as the fourth world experts find that their world is shrinking
mm-hmm.
and crumbling,
the up spiral natural expansion of these new energies, that fourth world is going to get smaller and smaller, and edges crumble off, until all these experts are like hanging together on this little piece of island in an ocean of fifth world. And, you know, and they just kind of get phased out.
Right.
Which
one
I know
we're images all... that, one of the images that I find amusing to think about in some of these topics, especially with respect to economics, is you look at the fourth world debate out there between the people that have some lever, some economic lever in their hand, like interest rates or something, and, oh, it needs to be higher. No, 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 it needs to be lower. And they argue back and forth, and they pull it this way, and they pull it that way. And what they don't really know is that the lever is not connected to the machine anymore. You know,
no,
they can argue all
visual.
Day. You know, it doesn't make any difference.
That's like, yeah, fighting over a car with no wheels.
That's right.
Right, yeah. It's not going anywhere.
No, no.
Another area that's really breaking down in the fourth world is our medical system. And, you know, treating our bodies as in the mechanistic world as machines that we can just, and it's wonderful. I mean, sometimes they can remove parts and it's wonderful to replace parts and go on, but we need to look back to the holistic world, the planet, view the planet in a holistic way, view our bodies in a holistic way. And I think we're moving there, and we're moving there quickly.
One of the things we talk about sometimes is the minimum daily requirement of spiritual energy in our food. It's like it's not on the list of vitamin A and B and C and D and all that stuff, but what is it? You know, it's like we all know this, that if you grow your own food or you eat food that's grown locally, how good that makes you feel. And it's different than getting the same kind of, say, cabbage or lettuce or something off of some truck that's been traveling 3,000 miles from Southern California or someplace. And you eat that corporate food, and there's something that's subtly different. And at some point, as we get into fifth world, I think there's going to be an energy requirement in food that is really most likely to be supplied by local agriculture and growing things in a local organic way. I think it's more than just the chemicals. And so we think, we look at those guys fighting over the economic lever. I think some things can also be said about the people fighting over different diets. You know, what are they really trying to find? They're really trying to find the Formula One diet that is the perfect fuel for the mechanistic machine that is our body, and they may not be including the right ingredients. You know, if they're not dealing with the spiritual components, there is no such formula to be found.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right.
Really, our thinking has to change in a lot of ways.
Well, it does, and especially where food is concerned. I know that, in particular, starseed people's bodies, because of the frequencies they carry, do not do well with processed foods and, you know, the chemicals and and that, because they were just, I guess it'd be like putting low-grade gas into a Ferrari. It just isn't going to run well.
Right.
And this new artificial sweetener that just came out to replace aspartame.
Oh, a new
one? They're calling Neotame.
Oh, good.
I'm sure that one's going to be right. I'm sure they got it right this time.
Yeah, no, it's worse. It's worse because apparently,
I was surprised.
apparently the patent, Monsanto patent on aspartame was expiring, so they went in and just changed one molecule, gave it a new name, and because it's no longer aspartame by chemical composition, now the FDA has said that they don't have to put it on the label. They can just sneak it into food, and they don't have to put it on the label. And this Neotame is like the one generation worse than aspartame. So for everyone that's listening, you have to really, really consider going organic and eating whole foods, because
mm-hmm.
if it's in a box, there's no telling now.
There's no telling now what's
that's
in those.
Right. That's
no.
right. And they've
no,
even stolen, and they've stolen the word organic in a lot of ways. You know, you see that on there, or natural. I mean, they don't really mean what we think they mean.
Natural does not mean
yeah.
what we might think it
right.
means.
Yeah, no, it could be natural crap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it
yeah.
is
yeah.
natural
dye.
Crap.
Well,
yeah,
arsenic is natural.
Arsenic's natural.
yeah, but yeah, I mean, vegetables. I mean, they wouldn't be able to get neotame in a vegetable that's being sold organically, because a lot of organic growers are really committed to their
it's very true.
To their work. And, you know, regulations notwithstanding, it really is up to the consumer, and especially as Starseed, stay away from artificial sweeteners.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's
yeah.
it's a neuroexcitotoxin,
mm-hmm.
and it can completely derail you. And, you know, just be very careful, everyone, now that they've upped the game. And, you know, I was talking to Lavendar about this earlier today, and it really is a way to kind of, it's a very poor attempt at stopping this, you know, this fifth world thing, but awareness is transcendent, so just know that it's there and avoid it. As far as chemicals in your food,
yeah,
goes.
As much as possible.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And
it is easier to do today. I think the trend is really growing to more local food, more organic food.
We see it all around this area that we live in. I'm sure it's out there too. It's the community supported agriculture and the local farming systems and the organic farms and. Farmers markets and on and on and on. We're part of a community-supported agriculture system, and we put a lump sum in once a year and pick up food once a week, and it's all grown locally and organic and the way it should be. So, you know, it's a beautiful thing to see, and it means at least some folks are paying attention and making some good steps in the right direction. That's good to see.
That's great. That's great. You know, and it really does taste better.
It really does.
It really
yeah.
does taste better. And, I mean, even mainstream grocery stores now are having larger and larger organic sections and more
yeah.
more choices, more selections.
Mm-hmm.
And,
what I like, too, is more restaurants are going to locally grown food. And I think that's a profound statement.
Well,
I know it
is because...
Mm-hmm. People want that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's just it. You have to give the customer what they want, and if they want organic, then, you know, you don't have to be given what's put in front of you if you don't want it. So, yeah, and restaurants is another place where you have to watch out for the, you know, if you're with prepackaged sauces and microwave
oh, right.
food and
yeah.
all that, you know, so.
Exactly.
You know, watch where you eat.
Yeah.
Exactly.
One of the arguments that always comes up on these sorts of things is, well, I would encourage organic, but it costs too much, so I'm going to, you know, go with the stuff in the box and the corporate food and everything. But, you know, one of the perspectives I think we all have to get to on these sorts of things is that one of the principal failings of the fourth world is the idea that we should select what we buy based on minimum price. I mean, that's basically what we are told to do and we're expected to do, and it has to do with competition, and whoever can get the price lower is the one who wins the game. And it's all made possible by preventing the consumer from knowing what went into the product that they are purchasing. If the people could see the state of being in the feedlots and the chickens that have 6 inches to turn around in and the bad energy and the stink and the rest of that and the chemicals the Monsanto
genetically modified organisms and all that sort of thing, if people knew what was in the food, the fact that this one is a penny cheaper than that one is not enough to encourage a person to make that choice. It's only when you presume that they're both equal things that it would make sense to choose the cheaper one, because that gives you more choice of other things to buy. But once you understand that there's a basic issue in pricing, then it suggests that the fifth world has to operate in some way that's quite different. And the concept that I've batted around for a number of years is that everything has a true price, not the market price, but a true price. And what is the true price? It's the price of doing it right, doing it locally, doing it with concern for the environment, with humanity and concern for the people that are working, good working conditions, not polluting the water, not dumping smoke in the air, all those sort of things, doing things in a good way, and then figuring out what it costs to do it that way, and that's why it costs that much. And the idea I've played with, I haven't actually seen it implemented yet, but you can take the idea of the consumer-supported agriculture and move in this direction. You would get people to commit to buying, when they can, the goods and services that are produced in a way that's consistent with the fifth world, even if it costs more. When they can, providing they don't put themselves in the poorhouse, but, you know, when they can, when they need a certain thing, they would buy it first from the people who are doing it in a sustainable way that's consistent with the principles of the fifth world. Mm-hmm. And the next step beyond that, as you get into the idea, as we talked about, about how important it is to have local agriculture and local groups and the concentration on small areas rather than transporting thousands of miles by big trucks and that sort of thing, you get to the point where you see that people can live in small communities and groups and have local industries that are supported by the people in these small areas. And those industries, whatever they are, whatever they make, would be on the menu list of such things made by other communities, and the communities basically would agree to buy from each other. And in time, such a system basically transforms the world until we are all doing things in a good way and living locally and enjoying it. So anyway, another idea to toss around.
Well, and if you go back 1,000 years, isn't that pretty much what they did?
Yes. Yes,
yeah.
They did. They lived locally.
Yeah.
They had to. You know, they didn't have transportation.
That's right.
So, you could only eat stuff from only so far away.
Right.
Right.
You know, and I have found that since it's been about quite some time that I just buy organic and locally grown produce whenever I can, and and as well as, you know, free range meats and grass fed beef and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you, I mean, it does cost more for the special care that they take in raising and producing the food, but when you figure you're not buying, you know, six packs of soft drink, and you're not buying, you know, the chips and the processed food, and all that stuff that you're not buying anymore, more than makes up for the cost of buying really the good food. And when it comes right down to it, if you live on the cheap food, sooner or later you're going to have a really big doctor bill that's going to wipe out those savings.
Yeah.
You know? Pay me now or pay me later. And we find, too, that, yes, the meat costs more, but we're eating less. And it's okay to eat less meat. Most Americans eat way too much meat anyway. So I think it does even out.
Some years back, we published an author from Africa, Maldoma Somei, I think it was him, that was visiting the United States, you know, for the first time or so, and at one point he and the author, Elliot Cowan, that we published, were going into a restaurant, and back in the kitchen, the chef was in a bad mood, and he was foul-mouthed and swearing and, you know, obviously, you know, having a bad day. And Maladoma said to Elliot, you're not going to eat here, are you? And it, well, why not? Well, you know, the energy that the chef is putting out back there goes into the food, and you eat the food, and that energy gets into you. You don't want to be like that, do you? And so they went somewhere else. But we have to think, you know, as soon as you start working with ideas like that, it's not enough to just have somebody bring the food out of the kitchen. You know, you need to have an understanding of what is the energy back in the kitchen, and who is working with this food. And that next step beyond that is you look into how the fast food restaurants operate. You've got all these dissatisfied people on minimum wage trying to make ends meet, and they're not making their ends meet, and they're getting frustrated, and they're back there throwing the food around, and then they throw it out to you, and then you eat that, and you're supposed to feel good and full of nutrition from that. It's just not going to work. We just have to open our eyes to the energy flows, the subtle energy flows all around us, and start doing things in a different way.
That's absolutely right. And by the same token, you know, when you have prepared yourself a meal, I mean, I always rotate my hands over the food and I project my intent and what I want that food to do for me.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
You know, that's probably it's like, you know, saying grace, really.
I was just
going
to say gratitude goes
mm-hmm.
a long way.
Yeah.
It just it's very transforming.
Well,
the whole
is,
purpose behind grace, I'm sure, right from the start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and of course, I mean, it is the energy of gratitude that is the manifestational magnet.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, yeah, well, because when you're in gratitude, you can attract to you anything that you want.
It yeah, I mean, know, we're doing the manifestations and we're doing working with these the water. We're definitely in a state of gratitude and grace, or I don't think it would be nearly as powerful.
Right. Yeah. And that's certainly it comes back around to that if every starseed person on the planet, every enlightened person on the planet can stay at least 55% of the time in a state of gratitude, the changes will be swift and magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
That yes, I agree
mm-hmm.
totally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of the understandings that have to become more widely accepted among people is we have to get out of judgment. You know, we can't judge that. Oh, my car's not good enough, or my house isn't big enough, or my salary's not, or that person has more than I do. Or all those kinds of judgments that we typically fall into. We have to get to the point where we just have gratitude that we are alive and we're breathing and we're here and we're experiencing the things that we are going through. We intended to do that and we are doing that. We are here. And there's just no point in trying to be judgmental about any of this. You know, we're just experiencing things here and having a good time doing it, even if it's a hard thing. You know, we sign up for things and they come along and we deal with it. So the opportunity that we have just to be on this planet and to live is something to be very grateful for. And so as soon as those kinds of attitudes become more widespread, then you can basically go through the whole day without being disappointed because you know, things are happening or just happening. I mean, they're just here for you to experience. And it's not personal. And, you know, if you're feeling hungry, it's because you know, this is an opportunity to feel hungry. That's something you wanted to do. And so here you are
right.
doing it, so be grateful for that.
Right. Well, we all chose to be here, you know. We all raised our hands. We all chose to be here. We chose our particular moment of birth. And everything, as Lavendar has said many times on this show, if you just remain stay out of judgment and remain as an observer, mm-hmm. and just, you know, appreciate everything in this third dimension that is of beauty, because there is a lot.
There's plenty
of beauty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
there's a lot.
Yeah. It always makes me feel better when I start, you know, getting a little bit off my focus, off my point. You know, it happens. I mean, everybody
gets a day
where... Well,
it happens to all
of us. Well, it's never happened to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay, so it's never happened to Brian.
Yeah.
But, you know, the day where you get every light red, you get every light red and everybody's trying to cut you off in the road. And those are the days when you really have to, you have the opportunity, because when you're already... you know, kind of getting in that mental funk, if you pivot the energy, then it's more like a catapult than if you're just kind of riding along, you know, in joyful gratitude all the time. So the opportunity of contrast to further define what it is that you want, that contrast is an energy that can help propel you even more quickly to what you do want. And sometimes we all order up a big old plate of contrast to say,
right.
Oh, you know, this is really, really okay, loud and clear. I'm starting to change things now.
Right.
So that's, I mean, you know, the contrast has a really great service to offer. You just can't
it really
live
does.
There.
You're right.
Yeah.
And we all seem to be very good at ordering up a big old plate of contrast.
Yeah.
And I don't think we haven't chosen easy paths. It's not an easy path that many of us are on.
If it were easy, it wouldn't be good.
Yeah.
Wouldn't learn anything.
So it can be frustrating.
Well, you know, you get down here, and number one, the starseeds not only had to raise their hand and volunteer, but they also had to be qualified. Because just because you wanted to come down here and participate in the shift doesn't mean you were qualified or that it was your turn or that your name was on it. So, yeah, you came here, you stepped into a third-dimensional earth suit, and sometimes it's easy to get caught up in that physicality, but we always have to come back to source, to your own truth, and realize who you are, and don't ever forget that you're here with a great purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think we need reminders sometimes of that. That's for ourselves. We need to keep reminding ourselves that, yeah, okay, I am on the right path, and get back to that faith, having faith again that I am on the right path and I am taken care of and I am going forward.
And having gratitude to our unseen allies for keeping us on that path and giving us the opportunities to do the work that we sign up for.
Right,
there's
right.
So
and
many
that
helpers
is,
out there. Yeah.
What I was just about to say, you're reading my mind now, Brian.
Well,
that
right.
every starseed, every walk-in, every light worker has a team that
mm-hmm.
did not come, and it is their sole purpose to help guide you and watch over you, and you have to remember that they're always there, and you're never, ever alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that they're infinitely patient.
Oh, they have to be.
They really do.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's easy for them because all time is now, so, you know, they don't have to be impatient.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, for us, it seems like...
Wait 1,000 years, it's like a second, you know?
That's right. That's right. Time to us is a completely third dimensional concept.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
then,
it has just been delightful to have you here, and so look forward to. I know that when Lavendar gets her water, she's going to be doing a little offshoot there in sending it out to as many people as she can.
Yeah, she'll have some fun with it. I'm sure.
Oh, well, I'm sure. Well, we're just about at the end of the show here. So, Lavendar and Sierra and Brian and Pamela, thank you for spending all of our Valentine's evenings together.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
It's been delightful.
And I just
it's been a lovely
I thought it was
day.
Perfect. I thought it was perfect to have such a loving and close couple. I mean, you really are ultimate Valentine. So it was perfect to have a happy couple as our guest this evening.
Yeah, well, we enjoyed it. Yeah, it was nice. It was nice to be a part of Valentine's Day with you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, from all of us here at Starseed Hotline, Lavendar, Sierra, and Sahar, we wish you all a happy remainder of Valentine's Day. And Brian and Pamela, we will be talking to you again soon, I'm sure.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks for having us
You're
on.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome.
Thanks
to
for all the good work that you do.
Yes.
Oh, it is a pleasure. And once again, the website is Fifth World, that's 5thworld.com, and granite-planet.net. So check it out, everybody. Thank you so much, and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.